The fifth photograph was also of Marilyn, taken at night through their bedroom window. She was dressed in a bathrobe. Her hair was down, and it looked damp. Stone stared at it. To get that picture, the photographer had been standing on their back lawn, his vision blurred and his ears hummed with silence. And then he shuffled the pictures together and closed the file, put it back on the desk, slowly. Hobie leaned forward and pressed the tip of his hook into the thick green paper. He used it to pull the file back towards him. The hook rasped across the wood, loudly in the silence. "That's my security, Mr. Stone," he said. "But like you just told me, I'm sure there won't be a problem." Chester Stone said nothing, just stood up and threaded his way through all the furniture and over to the door, through the reception area and into the corridor and into the elevator, down 88 floors and back outside, where the bright morning sun hit him in the face like a blow. That same sun was on the back of Reacher's neck as he made his way into Manhattan in the rear seat of a gypsy cab. He preferred to use unlicensed operators, given the choice. It suited his covert habit. No reason at all why anyone should ever want to trace his movements by checking with cab drivers, but a cab driver who couldn't admit to being one was the safest kind there was, and it gave the opportunity for a little negotiation about the fare. Not much negotiating to be done with the meter in a yellow taxi. They came in over the Triborough Bridge and entered Manhattan on 125th Street. Drove west through traffic as far as Roosevelt Square. Reacher had the guy pull over there while he scanned around and thought for a moment. He was thinking about a cheap hotel, but he wanted one with working phones and intact phone books. His judgment was he couldn't meet all three requirements in that neighborhood, but he got out anyway and paid the guy off. Wherever he was going, he'd walk the last part. A cutout period on his own. It suited his habit. The two young men in the crumpled $1,000 suits waited until Chester Stone was well clear. Then they went into the inner office and threaded through the furniture and stood quietly in front of the desk. Hobie looked up at them and rolled open a drawer, put the signed agreements away with the photographs, and took out a new pad of yellow paper. Then he laid his hook on the desktop and turned in his chair so the dim light from the window caught the good side of his face.
"Well?"
"We just got back," the first guy said. "Get the information I asked for?" The second guy nodded, sat down on the sofa.
"He was looking for a guy called Jack Reacher."
Hobie made a note of the name on the yellow pad.
"Who's he?"
There was a short silence.
"We don't know,"
the first guy said. Hobie nodded slowly.
"Who was Costello's client?"
Another short silence.
"We don't know that either," the guy said. "Those are fairly basic questions," Hobie said.
The guy just looked at him through the silence, uneasy.
"You didn't think to ask those fairly basic questions?"
The second guy nodded.
"We asked them, we were asking them like crazy. But Costello wouldn't answer."
"He was going to,"
the first guy said.
"But?"
"He died on us,"
the second guy said.
"He just upped and died. He was old, overweight. It was mainly a heart attack, I think. I'm very sorry, sir. We both are."
Hobie nodded again, slowly.
"Exposure?"
"Nil," the first guy said. "He's unidentifiable."
Hobie glanced down at the fingertips of his left hand. "Where's the knife?"
"In the sea,"
the second guy said. Hobie moved his arm and tapped a little rhythm on the desktop with the point of his hook. Thought hard and nodded again, decisively.
"Okay, not your fault, I guess. Weak heart, what can you do?"
The first guy relaxed and joined his partner on the sofa. They were off the hook, and that had a special meaning in this office.
"We need to find the client,"
Hobie said into the silence. The two guys nodded and waited. Costello must have had a secretary, right? Obi said. She'll know who the client was. Bring her to me. The two guys stayed on the sofa.
What?
This Jack Reacher, the first guy said. Supposed to be a big guy, 3 months in the Keys. Costello told us people were talking about a big guy. Been there 3 months, worked nights in a bar. We went to see him. Big, tough guy, but he said he wasn't Jack Reacher.
So?
Miami Airport, the second guy said. We took United because it was direct, but there was an earlier flight, just leaving Delta through Atlanta and New York.
And the big guy from the bar?
We saw him heading down to the gate.
You sure?
The first guy nodded.
99% certain. He was a long way ahead, but he's a real big guy, difficult to miss.
Hobie started tapping his hook on the desk again, lost in thought.
Okay. He's Reacher, he said. Has to be, right? Costello asking around, and you guys asking on the same day. It spooks him, and he runs. But where?
Here?
The second guy nodded.
If he stayed on the plane in Atlanta, he's here.
But why? Obi asked. Who the hell is he?
He thought for a moment and answered his own question.
The secretary will tell me who the client is, right?
Then he smiled.
And the client will tell me who this Reacher guy is.
The two guys in the smart suits nodded quietly and stood up, threaded their way around the furniture, and walked out of the office. Reacher was walking south through Central Park, trying to get a grip on the size of the task he had set himself. He was confident he was in the right city. The three accents had been definitive. But there was a huge population to wade through. 7.5 million people spread out over the 5 boroughs. Maybe altogether 18 million in the metropolitan area. 18 million people close enough to focus inward when they want a specialized urban service like a fast and efficient private detective. His gut assumption was Costello may have been located in Manhattan, but it was entirely possible that Mrs. Jacob was suburban. If you're a woman living somewhere in the suburbs and you want a private detective, where do you look for one? Not next to the supermarket or the video rental. Not in the mall next to the dress shops. You pick up the yellow pages for the nearest major city and you start calling. You have an initial conversation, and maybe the guy drives out to you, or you get on the train and come into him. From anywhere in a big, dense area that stretches hundreds of square miles. He had given up on hotels. He didn't necessarily need to invest a lot of time. Could be he'd be in and out within an hour. And he could use more information than hotels had to offer. He needed phone books for all 5 boroughs and the suburbs. Hotels wouldn't have all of those, and he didn't need to pay the kind of rates hotels like to charge for phone calls. Digging swimming pools had not made him rich. So he was heading for the public library. 42nd Street and 5th. The biggest in the world? He couldn't remember. Maybe, maybe not. But certainly big enough to have all the phone books he needed, and big wide tables and comfortable chairs. 4 miles from Roosevelt Square, an hour's brisk walk, interrupted only by traffic on the cross streets and a quick diversion into an office supply store to buy a notebook and a pencil. The next guy into Hobie's inner office was the receptionist. He stepped inside and locked the door behind him, walked over and sat down on the end of the sofa nearest the desk, looked at Hobie long and hard and silently.
What?
Hobie asked him, although he knew what.
You should get out, the receptionist said. It's risky now.
Hobie made no reply, just held his hook in his left hand and traced its wicked metal curve with his remaining fingers.
You planned, the receptionist said. You promised. No point planning and promising if you don't do what you're supposed to do.
Hobie shrugged, said nothing.
We heard from Hawaii, right?
The receptionist said.
You planned to run as soon as we heard from Hawaii.
Costello never went to Hawaii, Hobie said. We checked.
So that just makes it worse.
Somebody else went to Hawaii. Somebody we don't know.
Routine, Obi said. Had to be. Think about it. No reason for anybody to go to Hawaii until we've heard from the other end. It's a sequence, you know that. We hear from the other end, we hear from Hawaii. Step one, step two, and then it's time to go. Not before.
You promised, the guy said again.
Too early, Obi said. It's not logical, think about it. You see somebody buy a gun and a box of bullets, they point the gun at you. Are you scared?
Sure I am.
I'm not, Obi said, because they didn't load it. Step one is buy the gun and the bullets. Step two is load it. Until we hear from the other end, Hawaii is an empty gun.
The receptionist laid his head back and stared up at the ceiling.
Why are you doing this?
Obi rolled open his drawer and pulled out the stone dossier, took out the signed agreement, tilted the paper until the dim light from the window caught the bright blue ink of his twin signatures.
6 weeks, he said. Maybe less. That's all I need.
The receptionist craned his head up again and squinted over.
Need? For what? The biggest score of my life, Obi said.
He squared the paper on the desk and trapped it under his hook.
Stone just handed me his whole company. 3 generations of sweat and toil, and the stupid asshole just handed me the whole thing on a plate.
No, he handed you shit on a plate. You're out $1.1 million in exchange for some worthless paper.
Obi smiled. Relax. Let me do the thinking, okay? I'm the one who's good at it, right?
Okay. So how? The guy asked.
You know what he owns? Big factory out on Long Island and a big mansion up in Pound Ridge. 500 houses all clustered around the factory. Must be 3,000 acres all told. Prime Long Island real estate near the shore, crying out for development.
The houses aren't his, the guy objected.
Obi nodded. No, they're mostly mortgaged to some little bank in Brooklyn.
Okay, so how?
The guy asked again. Just think about it, Obi said. Suppose I put this stock in the market.
You'll get shit for it, the guy said back. It's totally worthless.
Exactly. It's totally worthless. But his bankers don't really know that yet. He's lied to them. He's kept his problems away from them.
Why else would he come to me?
So his bankers will have it rammed under their noses exactly how worthless their security is. Evaluation straight from the exchange. They'll be told this stock is worth exactly less than shit. Then what?
They panic, the guy said.
Correct, Obi said. They panic. They're exposed with worthless security. They shit themselves until Hook Hobie comes along and offers them 20 cents on the dollar for Stone's debt.
They'd take that, 20 cents on the dollar?
Obi smiled, his scar tissue wrinkled. They'll take it, he said. They'll bite my other hand off to get it, and they'll include all the stock they hold, part of the deal.
Okay, then what? What about the houses?
Same thing, Obi said. I own the stock, I own the factory out there, I close it down. No jobs. 500 defaulted mortgages. The Brooklyn Bank will get real shaky over that. I'll buy those mortgages for 10 cents on the dollar. Foreclose everybody and sling them out. Hire a couple of bulldozers, and I've got 3,000 acres of prime Long Island real estate right near the shore. Plus a big mansion up in Pound Ridge. Total cost to me? Somewhere around $8.1 million. The mansion alone is worth 2. That leaves me down 6.1 for a package I can market for $100 million if I pitch it right.
The receptionist was staring at him.
That's why I need 6 weeks, Obi said.
Then the receptionist was shaking his head.
It won't work, he said. It's an old family business. Stone still holds most of the stock himself. It's not all traded. His bank's only got some of it. You'd only be a minority partner. He wouldn't let you do all that stuff.
Obi shook his head in turn. He'll sell out to me, all of it. The whole 9 yards. He won't. He will.